Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Welcome to another Saturday program of KRBN, and I'm Robin, and Cliff's on the other end of the line.
Here I am, ready or not.
He is right there. We've got an interesting show for you today, and we're going to start out a little bit different as Cliff has something he would like to share.
Well, an astute person listening to the official recording yesterday of the Senate Budget and Appropriations Committee noticed that the official recording continued after the actual conclusion of the hearing, and the discussion that was caught on the continuation of the recording among several senators and staff members is kind of outrageous and reveals legislators' view of gun owners. Here's a couple of quotes. Quote, we needed a bill that was going to confiscate, close quote. That's one person. Another person's, the gun owners we're just speaking of, want to keep the guns out of the hands of the bad guys, but they don't want to have any regulations doing it, close quote. Another quote, they don't care about the bad guys. All they want to do is have their little hands on guns and whatever they want to do with them, close quote. Quote, the line that they've deployed is just exactly that. They don't want any responsibility, but they want to control. And how to do that without laws? So that's basically what they had to say. That was a bunch of people after the meeting was over that were talking among themselves. And you got to be careful wherever you're having a meeting and whatever you're saying, because the cameras may continue to roll.
Exactly. And we're talking about the recent law in Connecticut threatening the Second Amendment rights for gun owners. And we're going to get more in depth in that later on in the program. Also on the program, we're going to touch a little bit about what's going on with Russia and the Ukraine. And some of you may or may not know or have heard of the Dorchester Conference. It's very important as far as the Republican elections or primaries go here in Oregon. And we have an interview from one of the candidate running for U.S. Senate coming up here in a few minutes that was denied the invitation to go to the conference, and on basis of basically financial backing. So again, it's one of those type of situations where only, you know, if you've got money, you know, you're going to be invited and promoted, or anybody else that might even be a good candidate will not. But in the meantime, what we would like you to do is Cliff is going to share with you one really important good piece of information that is really important to this program, and that is how you can reach us. Cliff?
646-721-9887. And that happens to be a telephone number that is our telephone number. That's a number you dial to reach us and talk to us on the air about anything you want, but about what we're talking about mostly. It's the easiest thing, because that's probably what's in your mind. But if you have something specifically you'd like to say that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, we'll even do that. We'll even interrupt our whole show to let you on and talk about it. Now, that doesn't mean we'll let you, if you're a teenager, and we'll let you on and swear at us. That doesn't mean that. 646-721-9887. It's a telephone number to call. Do it.
Do it now. Right now. And if you happen to be one of the thousands of listeners that listen to us on the archives, you can still participate by sending us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. And if you are on air now or with us now, you can join us in the chat room, which is open at blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. And we're also available on iTunes. But more importantly, we'd like you to be available right now by giving us a call, 646-721-9887, on these topics or anything else, like Cliff said, that you'd like to talk about that's important on your mind, except for bacon. Give us a call.
Except for bacon?
It's a bacon thing.
Yeah, I understand bacon. I love bacon.
I love bacon, too.
Cool.
But if you ever want to, on a non-serious note here, next time you go into a restaurant, ask for unborn chicken embryos and shredded swine flesh.
Most of them will probably look at you and perhaps just walk away with their shaking their head. But I know a friend of mine and I went into a restaurant and did something like that once and got a very, very astute waitress that was really sharp. And she came back with what we're asking for, and had a lot of other things to say as well. But she also suggested that we move to the farthest corner, farthest table from the rest of the restaurant. But anyway,
I don't blame her. All right, so I'm moving along right along to some serious stuff. 646-721-9887. What we're going to do is we're talking about the Dorchester Conference. The senator in question, she's been on, or the candidate in question, has been on the program several times, and she gave me a call today and asked if she can come on briefly. And so a pre-recorded interview. The conference is going to be next week. And I'm going to let her tell you a little bit more about it and why it's important. So
we'd like to welcome back to the program Ms. Jo Rae Perkins, who is running for U.S. Senate. Welcome to the program, Jo Rae.
Good afternoon, Robin. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
And thank you very much for getting a hold of us on such short notice. There's an issue that is going on in the campaign that I know as a voter, it has me kind of riled, as it appears that the media is the one that chooses who actually is running and who we get to vote for. And I'm referring to the Dorchester conference coming up, next week?
Yep, March the 7th.
Would you like to give our listeners a little history on what's going on?
Yeah, so the Dorchester Conference was started many, many, many years ago. My understanding originally started underneath an organization called the Laws of Cabin Republicans, very liberal faction of the Republican Party. Senator Bob Backwood is very instrumental in getting that started, and he today is still honorary chairman of the Dorchester. Dorchester is a non-Republican event, so anybody of any political persuasion is invited to attend. Pay your money, you can be there. And it's billed as Oregon's largest gathering of conservative, like-minded people. Well, they do a roundtable issue throughout the day on Saturday discussing different issues, and people at each of the tables discuss a variety of issues, such as gun control and what do they think should happen. But a lot of these are just issues that somebody on the Dorchester board makes up and the delegates discuss them and then they're voted on and, really means nothing in the grand scheme of life. It's just kind of what-if scenarios. But the part that does matter is the debate of candidates for office. So Friday night, March the 7th, there will be a U.S. Senate candidate debate that is going to be held at Dorchester. All five of us candidates submitted our application to the Dorchester board, and in that we had to state any polling data that we have. Well, nobody's done any polling yet. Any financial benchmarks, but what one person's financial benchmark is not the same as another's, and what makes us think that we are a viable candidate. So I filled out my application and sent it in. And part of my viable candidacy is, according to the Constitution, I am a viable candidate in that I am at least the age of 30, and I am indeed a United States Senator for at least 9 years, which is the regulation,
right,
the rule. So I meet the criteria of being a viable candidate. I also mentioned the fact that I was the first candidate to have filed, that I have been traversing the state and then have participated in a variety of other candidate forums and debates. So we also submitted with that letter letters of support from other from voters. Some of them that I know are not even that aren't sure that they are going to vote for me yet, but their statement was, look, Joe Ray is a candidate. Joe Ray should be involved and invited in this debate or in this forum, whichever they're calling it.
Right.
Well, we received the information last week that indeed we were not invited to participate, and so they narrowed it down to the two top money winners. So this is what you've got. You have the two top money gatherers who the people at Dorchester decided that they're the ones that should be highlighted and the rest of us don't count for anything.
So
I do know that there have been numerous people without my knowledge until they told me that they have sent letters to the Dorchester board complaining that, you know what, these people are all candidates. They are all out there working hard, driving around the state, going to every event they can possibly get to, and you don't want the voters to know about them.
Absolutely. So basically, they're just going by, now when you're saying the financial, is that the money raised that they're counting on, or are basically their net worth?
That's what they're looking at. If you don't have enough money, then you don't count. Well, let's be real.
Right.
The role, the job of a United States senator is not to raise money. It is to govern according to what the Constitution of the United States of America says is the role of the U.S. Senate. Nothing else. It has nothing to do with how much money can you raise.
Well,
it has to do with governing.
Well, I totally agree. And in fact, if you're relating it to that, then the only people that you're representing are actually people that are, I'm going to say, not the common people, because not everybody has a lot of money.
Correct. So they're not representing Main Street Americans. And how much of their funding is coming from out of state?
Exactly. Do we know that? Do we know that? Do we have those stats?
You can go online and look at the FEC.gov website and pull up the report.
And that makes another good point, too, because, again, how often do we hear from other groups outside of the state that want to come in and for their own interest, not the interest of Oregon or the interest of the country, to come in and try and sway the elections? And that's what I think, that's what it sounds like is what's happening here, that the media is trying to pick and choose who we get to vote on again.
Well, the media is culpable in this, but we have a, as far as Dorchester goes, a private organization. They have a board of directors, and so they're calling the shots as far as this event goes. Well, this is who we want to have there and can speak, and we think that they're the only two that are viable candidates. The rest of you guys don't count.
Okay, now folks, I want to point out something really, really important here, because now this is a good example about Joe Ray's fortitude. Joe Ray, tell them what you're going to do.
Okay, so after we received the notification that we were not invited to participate in the candidate forum or debate, I submitted my check for $150 to have a booth at the Dorchester Conference, and sent out a press release that I will be at the Dorchester Conference, and I will be at my booth, and I will be there to answer any questions that anybody wants to ask me. Doesn't matter what the topic is, they can ask. I'm not going to shrink away. I'm not going to hide. I'm not going to leave to go to a competing event that's going to be taking place on Saturday in Clackamas. I said I would be there. I am going to be there.
And that's the thing that I really admire about you, Joe Ray. You don't take no for an answer. You go out there and you get out there and do it. You're not afraid to tackle the issues.
Yeah, I definitely am not afraid to tackle the issues. And I have nothing to hide. And I think, Robin, what is really frustrating to me as a candidate, and should be at least, if not more so, frustrating to the voters and to your listening audience, is the number one complaint that I have seen, that I've read, is that people are tired of having people with money and people of means that are the only ones that end up getting elected. And this is nothing to be disparaging against people with money and people of means. God bless them. But the thing is that the majority of Americans are hardworking Main Street Americans. They're not part of the uber wealthy. They're not doctors and attorneys. They're carpet installers. They're millwrights. They're grocery clerks, moms, and you know what I mean, mechanics, and just everyday people that get up, go to work, to make some money, to bring it home, to provide for their families, and maybe have something left over to go take a vacation and enjoy time with their families or other extracurricular activities. But yet, the media has decided that, well, it's only these people that have the big bucks. And then everybody complains, well, everybody in Congress are millionaires. Well, that's because that's what you keep electing.
Exactly. Exactly.
So started electing somebody who says, you know what, I'm right here with you. Joe Ray Perkins is a Main Street American. My husband is a carpet installer. And he works hard. I've worked hard. We understand the struggles that people go through on a regular basis. But more importantly, I'm a constitutional conservative. We have a job to do as the United States Senate, and that is according to what is listed specifically in the Constitution. The role of the government is not to tell you that you must buy this health insurance plan, and if you don't, we're going to fine you, you cannot log your own trees, because Lord knows that could hurt something.
Yeah.
We've got to get back to what the job of the Congress is, and the number one job is to protect our borders from enemies. That's the number one job. Number two is print coins.
Is what?
So. Print coin.
Print coin?
Money. Print
okay.
coin.
Okay. Okay.
You have to read the Constitution.
Yes.
it's all in there, folks. It's all in there.
It is in
so,
there.
But I want to say this also. I actually happen to like and respect all of the candidates that are in this primary election. I really do. Each of us brings something different to the table, which for me as a voter, I happen to like, because that gives the voters a choice of deciding which candidate most meets the individual voters' criteria. Which one do they think would best represent Oregon and abide by what the Constitution says. And that's really what people should be looking at. Stop reading the newspaper. Don't read the newspapers. They have a job, and their job is to sell newspapers.
Exactly, and I'll throw one more out there, too. Too many times have we heard candidates promise or make promises, and as soon as they get elected, those promises are out the window. Now, granted, to give some, you know, pray devil's advocate, sometimes it's beyond their control. But from what I've got to know Joe Ray, and from what I believe in my heart, you're not the type of person that if you're not going to make a promise that, you know, you can't keep. If you know, you're going to keep that promise if you're able to.
Hey, exactly. And I've only made one promise, because it's a promise. See, I know I can keep it. Because remember, I'm going to be one of 535 voices between the House and the Senate. But this is the promise that I make. I will read, or my staff will read, every single bill before we vote on it. If we do not have time to read that bill, it's an automatic no vote. We cannot vote for what we do not know what is in there. We're going to scrub those bills. We're going to make sure those bills are 100% congruent with the Constitution of the United States of America, including the amendments. We're going to make sure that those bills are free of pork barrel spending and unrelated projects. And we're going to make sure those bills are fiscally conservative and socially conservative. Let's get back to the job of the people.
Exactly. So
and that is a promise I can keep very easy.
And remind those people up there what the word Constitution means.
Exactly. And the nice thing is that we already have some people in D.C. that are holding strong to that Constitution. And they're going, no, we can't do this. We cannot continue down this path because it's going to destroy our country. I can promise, I'll make another promise.
Okay.
And you heard it here. So this is the other promise. I'm not going to sell out. And people, and this is a valid concern of voters. They go, how do we know that you're not going to get sucked in to all the money and all the power and then give in and not keep the first promise? Well, my background as a financial planner has prepared me for this position. You see, folks, as a financial planner, I have to abide by a fiduciary rule, the prudent man rule that says that any investments that I made on behalf of my clients had to be prudent and had to fit within their risk tolerance. But in addition to that, I had representatives calling on me because they wanted me to sell their product to my clients. And I always told them, I would say, look, I like you. I think you're a really nice person. But if your product is not at least as good as or better than what I'm currently using, I cannot do business with you, even if it means more money in my pocket. I cannot do it because it's not my money. The money belongs to my client. You see, folks, the tax money that the government takes from you, not their money, it's your money.
Absolutely.
So I know I'm not going to sell out. I've already proven it that I will not sell out.
So there you go, folks. You heard it here first. Joe Ray, how do people get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me via my website, Perkins for F-O-R, USSenate.com, or Oregon's Next Senator. They can find me on Twitter, Perkins, the number 4 Senate. They can find me on Facebook. Just put in my name, put in your search engine, Joe Ray Perkins, and they can track me down almost anywhere. Perkins for USSenate.com is the fastest way to find me.
And the spelling is easy, P-E-R-K-I-N-S. So check her out, and this is a real honest candidate. I hope you, Joe Ray, good luck with the Dorchester conference. I want to report back, if you don't mind, and we'll have it back
absolutely.
On again.
Absolutely. In fact, I'll give you a call next Saturday during the Dorchester conference. I will be in the vendor hall talking to people. So maybe when we call, somebody might actually ask a question. We'll answer it live on air.
Sounds good. All right, Joe Ray, thank you again so much for calling, and we'll stay in touch, folks. She's worth checking out. Perkins for USSenate.com.
And we're back live. And it'll be kind of interesting to do a live report from the Dorchester Conference and kind of like have a, I don't know, we have a woman on a street interview.
A woman on a street, huh? Okay.
Or in this case, a woman in the corridor.
Or a woman we send around anywhere.
Right.
We'll catch up with her anywhere she happens to be, so. Okay, interestingly enough, yeah.
Yeah, so,
I was just sitting here looking online at the Dorchester Conference, and I'm not sure what I think about it.
I think that they take very bad pictures.
I don't know about their pictures, but it looks to me like they're tongue-in-cheek. They got a whole section there about where politics is fun, and the Dorchester 50 teaser. I don't know. I'm going to need to look that up a little further and find out if they're for real or not.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure if they are.
Well, of course, again, this is mainly related to Oregon, but you know, a lot of the senators, governors came through the Dorchester, and so, but. Anyways, moving right along.
I wouldn't be too upset if I was her at being excluded from it, to be honest with you. Okay. From the looks of things and what I see on the internet about it. I just don't think I would.
Well, you know what would make me very excited right now?
What?
How about if somebody would, what's that number again?
Oh, the telephone number, 646-721 9887. You mean that particular?
Yeah, that particular number right there.
That's a number they could call if they really want to talk to us and if they want to debate whether Dorchester is real or not.
That's right. Or what they think about the gun control law that was recently passed in Connecticut, or what's going on in the Ukraine with Russia, and what our lovable president is handling it.
Well, I don't know. There's our lovable president is I keep saying over and over again, our lovable president doesn't have a clue. And I'm still serious about the fact that he doesn't have a clue. He really doesn't have a clue and about much of anything. So whatever, he's the French media are kind of being on the fence post as it goes. They're talking about the Ukraine and the fact that the Ukraine is on the verge of bankruptcy, and Europe has already said that it's not going to pay to support Ukraine. So it leaves it up to the United to Russia to do so. I mean, because obviously we're not going to if it's a Russian. I don't want to call it a program, but it's sponsored by Russia, and it's Russian money that's in there, so that kind of leaves us out of it. They're in trouble. They really are. So Russia's obviously going to step in. It's a pretty good sized country, and they're not going to just leave it alone. And there's a lot of people that want to be something. Now you got to understand, a lot of the people there were there when Russia ran the country, and they're Russian involved in the first place. So in reality, there are more people that would like to see the country run by Russia than not. So we have very little to say about it, and I'm really a little upset that our president is sticking his nose once again where it doesn't belong. He doesn't seem to understand where he should be and where he shouldn't be, because things that he should do, he completely leaves alone and leaves it unattended, and things that he should have nothing to do with, he sticks his nose in. And, you know, to me, I would just assume that we, I'd like to put him on a shelf and leave him there and not let him do anything.
Well, I agree. I mean, he scares me more than Russia does, to be honest.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, I feel like we have nothing we can do about it. We can do something about it if we'd all get together and work on it and think about it and do something. But we can never get that many people together until...
No, it won't happen. Just like what happened in the Ukraine, you know, the people rose up, and it wasn't until the police and everybody finally said, we're not firing on our own citizens, and so that's how they were able to take back control of their government, and the president fled to, I think it was Russia, for protection. And unfortunately, I have a feeling that that's what's going to happen in this country, is that at some point, I hate to say I'm not advocating for violence, but what I am saying is that what we're starting to see in other countries and what we're seeing over here is we're losing our rights. We're losing, for example, the... Constitution doesn't mean anything anymore. And I've asked the question, I've even asked Joe Ray this question, and nobody really has an answer. If the president does something that's unconstitutional, why is it enforced? Like, for example, the penalties for Obamacare, for example, only Congress can enact the tax, not the Supreme Court. But yet now we have this penalty, which is a tax if you don't have insurance, which is going to be enforced by the IRS. It's not constitutional, but yet it's being enforced, and you will be punished if you do not pay this.
And if we don't stand up on our hind legs, so to speak, and scream and holler and yell and do something about it, if we don't be counted as individual people, we're not going to have a thing to say about it.
That's
because
right.
They're just people who have enough fortitude, I'm going to say, to actually stand up for themselves and to scream and yell and to propose bills and such things are getting their way. And all the rest of us are sitting back and just acknowledging the fact that they're smarter than we are, that they're stronger than we are, and they aren't. They really shouldn't be anyway, let's put it that way. It's too bad that we're letting them be, because it's because we're letting them do things that they're getting away with, and we let them get away with it. It's very upsetting.
Exactly. And folks, if you don't think that this will happen, listen to this statement here. This is from, of course, I just had it, United States District Judge Alfred Covello from Connecticut, who issued a 47-page ruling calling Governor Mulally's legislation constitutional. And he says that, and this is a quote, while the act burdens the plaintiff's Second Amendment rights, it's substantially related to the important government interest of public safety and crime control. Those words right there alone can mean anything. It can mean that we feel that you having a knife is going to interfere with government safety or with public safety. So we're going to pass a law against a knife. And like what you read at the beginning of the program, in fact, I don't know if you want to paraphrase that or not, about how they are wanting to take over all control.
Well, that's the thing. That's our in this particular case, this is just the people that were speaking off the cuff and off the record, they thought, in what they were saying. But it's true. People think that we have no control over our country. And at this particular point, do we?
We're losing a lot of our control. And this is why this is really important, because it's an excellent example. People are starting to stand up to these type of legislations, like a person in our chat room reminded about what's going on in New York, is that even as this article is saying, is that 130,000 people are suddenly become or can be charged with a Class D felony, which is interesting enough because a felony is a federal thing and this is state. But still, it made people outlaws. And just because they decided to pass a law against automatic weapons or semi-automatic weapons and the cartridges and how many shells they can hold, what's next? They get this going and say, well, we think that all semi-automatic weapons should be banned. Only you can own is a 22 pistol. It could go that way.
That's true. And it's possible to do it fairly quickly because things are leading up to that at this particular point because we aren't – well, I will have to admit, I looked up the other day and I don't have the numbers with me because I didn't write it down or save it for some reason or other, like an idiot. The United States has more privately owned, I'll put it that way, privately owned guns than any other country in the world, and more than twice most countries. There's only a couple of countries that are anywhere close to that, what we have as far as countries are concerned. But we have more than anybody. So we're not going to – I don't see us any – With any smarts at all, we're not going to have any group of people in our country that can actually sit down and propose legislation that will make us give up our guns. I mean, I don't see any day soon the time when we're going to have people going door to door saying you got to give up your gun.
Well, here's the thing that really gets me is that one of the, and I'm going to use the word excuses, that Connecticut is doing this because it's Sandy Hook incident with the elementary school massacre.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing as like saying, okay, one person ran a red light, which is bad, and caused an accident, which is bad. So now we're going to ban all cars because it doesn't matter that, you know, 50 million people are on the road driving cars, but one person screwed up.
I've got a better idea. Let's ban red lights.
That's scary.
That is scary, yes.
But you see where I'm going here is that out of all the people that even have concealed carry permits, very few people abuse them. You know, why regulate something just because one or two people go berserk?
Well, Colorado's stepping in line. Almost the entire state is actively refusing to comply with Obama's anti-gun agenda.
Right.
Their official estimates suggest that the overwhelming majority of the citizens in Colorado targeted by the latest assault on gun rights failed to comply. In fact, analysts say it appears that most people largely ignored the new statute, which purports to ban numerous non-registered assault weapons. And, when they start doing assault weapons, that's one thing. And we may sit back and say, well, that's okay. It's assault weapons. Nobody needs to own assault weapons. But they're not going to stop there. They're going to go on and on and on. And so I don't think that's a logical move. We need to...
It's just like what's going on in the chat room now is that I'm going to quote the art. What he's saying is that there are over 1.5 million of these firearms, and our local sheriffs have said that they will not enforce the SAFE Act. And that's the other thing, too. Law enforcement is saying, hey, no. So that brings up the question of what happens when, like, a commander wants to go to war and people are just going, yeah, you go ahead. Let us know how it works out for you.
Yeah, really. Well, I don't see. There's a lot more. A commander, you say, wants to go to war. I don't know that I would follow any specific person either. But there's just so much going on in this world that we don't understand and don't know about, and we have to figure that out before I just blindly go in and turn in my gun or. And I don't have a gun, mind you, so that's no big thing. But if I did, and I may go out and buy one just for that reason, but I don't know. It's pretty important that we keep our freedoms and our rights to do things.
Well, yeah, this is just one step. Is like he's saying here, is the state police will have to find out who owns these weapons and where they are, then they'll have to break down a lot of doors and incidents resulting in death and injury. And our person in the chat room is in the Finger Lakes region of New York, so I guess he's kind of getting more of a direct impact of what's actually going on than what we're
getting.
Well,
if they started letting the police department go through door to door, that's, once again, that's infringing on our privacy, going door to door, asking any question, no matter what it is. It's just not to be done in this country. That's not something we can allow to happen, because the first time we allow people to go door to door and ask any question, I don't care what it is, then we've given up a privilege and a right that we really don't want to give up.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it sounds like that there is a little bit of resistance. Like in Connecticut, they said only 47,916 completed registration forms was sent in, and out of the roughly 130,000 estimated gun owners out there. So people are not exactly, either they don't know about the law changes, or they're resisting, or they're just kind of saying, like the old school, hell no, you ain't getting our guns.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I think, what we're getting a lot of is that, hell no, you ain't.
Right. I still believe that part of the reason why we still have what freedom that we have today is because they really don't know how many guns are out there, who has what. And part of the, I think it's history says that, I'm not sure if it's this country, but history says in the other countries that it first starts with gun registration, then it starts with confiscation, and then next thing you know, you're living in a communist country. and you've given up all your rights.
Yeah. And I'm not ready for that. I'm just absolutely not ready for that in any state or any in any way, whether it be guns or something else. I'm not ready to give up my freedoms, no matter what they are. And in a way, you have to be careful because you have to be able to be prepared to live your freedoms respectfully.
You got to be prepared to fight for your freedoms.
Well, I mean, but it's still, you've got to be respectful about the whole thing because you can't just go out and fight and scream and holler and yell for it's just any old thing. That because when you say you've got to fight for your freedoms, that's a lot of people think, I get to go out and fight. I just don't think that's necessary. I think we do have to sit back and demand our freedoms. I mean, in other words, when we're told to give up our guns, just don't. Simply don't.
Right, exactly. And like you say, it doesn't have to be violent. It could be, okay, these legislatures or whatever decide on their own, we're going to put these laws in that affect the individuals. Well, these, even though a judge upheld it, saying it's constitutional, that's when people need to get together and start the recall effort. They need to start attacking through the courts and get those people out of there, fight it as much as they can. But again, here's a sad thing, and I'm going to go back to Obamacare for a moment. You know, the Obamacare is an illegal act, but yet the Supreme Court upheld it. So what do you do? And then when they don't, you know, if they're not following their own laws, because there are three-party system, the way our system is set up, if it's not working, what do you do?
Yeah. We've already got the Brady Act already pretty well sits down or lays down whether you can or cannot own a gun. And they were very careful and thought about that for a long time. And, well, one of the reasons – okay, the Brady Act is – the one of the reasons you can't own a gun is if you were convicted of a crime punishable by being in prison for more than a year. Well, see, I don't know that that's even legitimate because – it doesn't say what crime. It just says any crime punishable by being in prison for more than a year. Well, prison doesn't necessarily mean you're going to pick up a gun or isn't an inducement to having a gun. That doesn't make sense to me. The number two reason for not having a gun is, are you a fugitive from justice? Well, again, you can be a fugitive from justice without owning a gun. So I don't know if I go along with that. Number three, are you addicted to or use any controlled substance? Now, I can see that myself because I don't think you're in control of yourself or your own mental order if you are using a controlled substance. Another one is, have you been ruled mentally defective by a court or you're committed to a mental institution? Okay, I can see that one being a good reason. Five, an illegal man are... alien, an illegal alien living in the United States unlawfully. Well, now, there are an awful lot of illegal aliens living in the United States unlawfully that wouldn't even think of having a gun or using a gun or owning a gun. And so that's completely absurd. Six, receive a dishonorable discharge from the U.S. Armed Forces. That's completely that's ridiculous. Seven, renounce your U.S. citizen if you are a U.S. citizen. Well, what does that have to do with a gun? Again, and are you subject to court order restraining that invokes your intimate partner? What? Are you subject to a court restraining order that involves your intimate partner or your partner's child or children or were convicted? Well, anyway, there's only a couple of reasons in this Brady Act that I consider are legitimate reasons for not owning a gun. They've gone way off beam to try to make rules and regulations.
Right.
You know, if you've used a gun, if you've been in trouble with a gun, if you're mentally disabled, then those might be a good reason for not allowing you to have a gun. But those are about the only reasons.
Well, and the other point that as we're chatting online here. By the way, you can give us a call right now, 646-721-9887, if you'd like to join us live right now on this topic or anything else that you'd like to talk about, or join us in the chat room as we've got a little bit of a conversation going on there, blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. As one of the things we're talking about on here in the chat room is challenging the law, and like I was saying, it can be bogged down in the courts and held up in that regard, but that does not stop the enforcement of the law in the meantime. So
if you've not decided you don't want to follow the law, that's one thing, because if you're decided you're above the law, I believe there are some people who do think that they don't have to follow all the laws, but making the laws absurd is part of the reason why people do that. There are 9 items here on this Brady Act. Only 2 are, I think, legitimate reasons.
Right.
And the rest of it is absurd. So when you start making absurd rules, then people stop paying attention to them and stop following the rules.
Well, it's ridiculous. I mean, just like the Brady Act and this in Connecticut regarding Sandy Hook, it's a reactionary law. It's a panic law.
Well, and we keep doing that, and we keep adding more and more and more laws. We don't ever take any off.
Right. But this is, and like you read in the beginning, it's more about control. It starts with this, it gets in, people get comfortable with it or whatever, or start complying, and then they restrict the law, and pretty soon, we're down to surrender all your handguns or register everything, because was it like in D.C., I'm trying to go by memory here, the carry law for handguns was challenged, and they finally, I think it got overturned, but they're only allowed to have a handgun in their residence for protection, but if they take it outside, they get in big trouble.
Well, it's kind of silly to just carry it around in the house.
Here's the thing, is that, here's the reason to have a gun. And I'll use this area here, Lane County, Oregon, is that police are reactionary. If somebody breaks into your house, your only defense, if you don't have a weapon or whatever, I mean, anything can be a weapon, is to call the cops. If you can actually get the opportunity to call the cops. In the meantime, you can have whoever pointing a gun at you, because they're not going to go, oh, my God, I can't go hold up this, break into this house with a weapon because it's against the law. What am I going to do? They don't care. So here you are. You got somebody in your house, 3 o'clock in the morning. Your family's at risk, and your options is to make a phone call, if you can at least do that. Now let's take it one step further. Let's say that you have an alarm system on your house, and because a lot of alarm systems you can set up so it protects the perimeter and turns off the internal sensors, so you can protect it. Alarm goes off. Monitoring station picks it up. In this area here, the alarm company cannot directly call the police. They must send out a security guard to come and put eyes on the residents to make sure it's a valid alarm. Then the police will be dispatched.
Okay, but that's another reason. There's another reason for that. That's because for a while, when we first started putting these alarm systems in, the police got so busy running false alarms to these alarm systems that they couldn't do anything else. That's why that rule came into. I mean, there was a logic behind that.
But that just comes down to poor alarm installation or somebody not setting it up right. And they have a system in place at least in Eugene, that if you get more than 3 false alarms in a year, you get fined, to try and reduce that. I understand that. But the whole point is, when you come out and say, I mean, generally in the city, you've got when alarm goes off, you've got about a 2 to 5 minute window before an officer arrives, depending on the coverage. You just increase that window by at least 15 minutes.
Well, I don't know. I personally, if I had an alarm system See, I happen to agree with the idea of not sending somebody, a policeman out and not calling the police, because it just puts away too much of a burden on there. We should be, if we're paying for a service like this, we should be paying for someone who's listening in, and we should be paying, we should be paying to have someone come out. I mean, that's up to our ability to pay or our wish to pay, but I don't think that should be put on our public servants to just automatically go out and do things like that. That's, you know, if we want to have something that could turn out to be a false alarm, then we should pay for it.
I agree. That's what I'm saying, that most states have that. But the whole point is I'm not trying to defend why or not that they're responding to alarms. The whole point is if your house is getting broken into, you're in there and you have somebody that is in your house, you are in fear of your life, and if you have no way to defend yourself or your family, what are you going to do?
Well, I take it back. I can see why I have a gun in your house. I don't know that I would be carrying it, but to have one available and by your bedside or wherever you think it could be to protect you. And I really believe that, you know, I keep hearing of these these situations where a burglar or somebody is in your home, and you do something, you shoot him or whatever, and they put you in jail for protecting yourself because you're just not supposed to kill people. Well, you know, if somebody's in my home and doing something that they shouldn't be, even if it's just being there, I'm going to be more than happy to shoot them. I don't care who they are and what's going to happen to me, because I'm just not for that. If you want to come in, I'll say okay, but I have to have the power to say okay.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, you said you'd shoot them. They took your guns away. How can you protect yourself?
Again, I'm going to be one of those people that doesn't follow the law. I'm going to be one of those people. If I really think it's going to be a problem and I need to protect myself, then I'm going to do something that's against the law. And again, see, as far as I'm concerned, if a person breaks into my house, you know, even if the door was unlocked and they weren't invited in, as simple as that, then as far as I'm concerned, that's fair game.
Well, here's my prediction, because there's two things you don't mess with the people in the United States. Number one, you don't mess, at least in this area, don't mess with the Ducks, you know, football. Number two, you don't touch our guns.
Yeah. And as far as I'm concerned, you can have the Ducks.
Yeah, you can have the Ducks. But basically, you know, people, well, just like what's going on in New York and what's going on in Connecticut and others, you know, you can only push people so far. But when you start hitting them at home, you know, like the guns and whatever, there's a point that people are not, even law-abiding citizens are just going to say, enough is enough.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, what scares me is Obama has expanded the civil forfeiture rules, making it permissible for the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms and Explosives to seize weapons from citizens without the hassle of due process. And that scares me to death. That's why Obama scares me to death. He just doesn't know what he's doing. He just says things on whim and doesn't know what he's saying. That's giving Attorney General Eric Holder, the guy from Fast and Furious fame, the power to go out and extend the power over guns and related property and just do what he wants to. He can, you know, I don't think that Obama is using his head.
Well,
he may be using what he has of a head, and it isn't.
Well, here's the thing, too, that kind of comment offline. If you want to see something scary, you think that what's going on in New York and Connecticut is scary, go to the White House website and read up on FEMA and what they can do to declare martial law. All they have to do is declare an emergency, and they can declare martial law. And go read what martial law is and what it's all about and what they can do, because basically the way I understand it, they can suspend the Constitution by declaring martial law.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the thing. That's the kind of a thing that Obama would give permission to do. And it should be extremely hard to declare martial law. I mean extremely hard. And something that – and it is true to this point. It hasn't been that easy. But I do believe that Mr. Obama is possibly going to give the rule a run for its money. He's just too old. He doesn't know.
It's not just an Obama thing. It's also, like I say, it's local states that are and they're panicking. They're taking this as an opportunity for control. I can't remember who the guy says is don't ever let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, the thing is, we can perhaps do a little more about electing or ejecting local officials than we can trying to eject, you know, the Attorney General. But if it's a local or a statewide, we have a little more control over what's going on, what's not going on, than we did do with the national people. But it's still a problem, and we're taking away our own rights day by day, a little more,
right,
until we're not going to have any left.
It's getting scary, and that's I'm really hoping, I'm really praying that you know, what's going on in New York, the resistance with that, what's going on in Connecticut, people not bending down and saying, here, we're going to do this. I think partly the government's a little bit worried that something like the Ukraine is going to happen, where people are just going to stand up. It's been predicted. I know that the government is being prepared for that. They know that sooner or later that it's going to happen, and especially as more and more control that we lose from the government. You know, we're supposed to be the government. We've lost that privilege a long time ago.
That's true. And we're just keeping, like I said, we just continue doing it and continue. Wednesday, Governor Daniel Malloy signed into law, actually he signed into law on Thursday. It was passed on Wednesday in the Senate vote, but he signed it into law on Thursday, the bill banning semi-automatic assault rifles. Limits the capacity of ammo magazines and features, requires a background check for all weapon sales, including gun shows. We just are signing our lives away slowly but surely, one step at a time. And sooner or later, people are going to realize what's happening to them, and they're going to get mad.
Yeah.
And then we're going to start, when that happens, that's when we start having some problems with violence and things like that. That's when people get so mad and so upset that they don't mind what they do. They don't care what they do. That's, you know, we'd be smart to have our government officials, if there are any of them that have any smarts at all, think about this and start not passing these laws that are constricting more and more and more. I mean, they're not going to get away with it. You know, the people who are doing the trouble are not going to be paying attention to the law in the first place. So let's just not make the law. Let's, you know, people know what they're doing. They know that they should or shouldn't be doing it, and should be nice about doing things. And we just shouldn't be doing this sort of thing. So we should,
well,
don't need laws to do it.
I agree, and that's just exactly what it's going to take. We're cutting the show a little bit short because of a previous engagement. Again, my thanks to the R.K. Cole Jr. in the chat room. Please keep us informed of what's going on in New York, and if you have any input as well, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Also, what you think about this, let us know. If it happens to you, would you turn your guns in and be back to take care of you? Thank you for joining.
Bye.
sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.